Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. How do social forces shape the future of higher education right here in South Dakota? Teresa Stallings is Associate Professor of Sociology at Northern State University in Aberdeen. She holds a doctorate in sociology. She has been there for more than two decades, and she's retiring after this semester. This Wednesday, she presents The Power of Unintended Consequences, or How Did We Get Here from There? It's a lecture you can see at the Williams Library Rotunda at noon. And Professor Stallings joins us today from the Tom and Danielle Ammon Foundation Studio at Northern State University. Professor Stallings, welcome.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Glad to be here.
Congratulations on your retirement and a long, storied career at Northern.
Yes, it's been a good one.
All right. So as you prepare to sort of, move on to the next stage in life, this is a pretty important lecture in the sense that are you planning on condensing a whole lot of knowledge into one space, looking to the future? Give us an overview of what you want to talk about.
Well, what I'm going to be talking about is how past social forces have gotten us to where we are today with higher education, and especially in terms of expectations people have of higher education, but more importantly, how we got to where it costs so much to go to college.
That's a great question. I have a 17-year-old daughter who's applying for college, and that's one of the things I was thinking, like, why does it cost so much? What are some of those forces that were at play that got us to where we are today?
Well, believe it or not, World War II. Prior to World War II, college was for the elite, the wealthy. And so very few people of middle to lower incomes could go. But World War II brought about the GI Bill. And, we had a lot of men coming back who weren't working. And so this gave them a chance to go to college. It was a shocking success in that 8 million more took the government up on it than were expected. Mm-hmm. So the government had to really pitch in. You know, they were paying for it, but we didn't have buildings or campuses enough for this group of people. And so this started the federal government's involvement in higher education.
A consequence that perhaps did they have a sense that that's what they were doing, or was there a sense that this was a smaller policy that they were, providing this service for people who had, defended in World War II?
Well, they weren't expecting this. Mm. So it started the federal government being involved in the financing of higher education. So what we have, it was generally private schools and a few public, but anyway, it was okay at that time because we started having a booming economy, post-war economy. And so we had a lot of money to spend on higher education. We just needed to build buildings. And so that was fine. So states started investing in building buildings, and so the federal government was helping families pay for college. And that started then after that, the National Defense Student Loan Program, which later was called the Federal Perkins Loan Program, which did for civilians what the GI Bill did for veterans, which opened the college gates even wider. And finally, we have the Civil Rights Movement as a backdrop. We have then the landmark Higher Education Act of 1965, which pushed for greater college access for women and minorities. Hmm. So this then opened that up. So as the federal government gets more involved and social policy becomes involved in higher education, we see more and more people being able to go.
Do we see the... Go ahead.
I remember when I went to Clemson back in the early 70s. Which is a land-grant state college, there were six guys to every girl. Hmm. And that was because women hadn't gone there for long.
So the social impact of this, of having a more diverse student body at higher education, of expanding the universities in their communities, of getting an education for more and more Americans, the impact of that has to be almost immeasurable.
Oh, it is. And like I say, women being involved in college and minorities, that didn't happen before. Yeah. But then we have what we have now, where in the 70s we had double-digit inflation, an oil embargo, and a sputtering economy. And so we had a perfect storm beginning to build. And so college tuition and fees climbed much more than the inflation rate. And the federal government started subsidizing private loans rather than giving states money for grants. Mm. So it started putting the onus back on the individual and the individual's family for paying for college as opposed to government.
You mentioned the buildings and really keeping up with, you know, the structures that where even classes need to be held. I'm wondering about the impact of really how that was done. You know, how campuses were, you know, as we, you know, visit different campuses, that they're laid out so differently. And I'm always trying to sort of crack the code of, you know, what does it mean that this campus looks like this, that these buildings are here and they're here in a certain way. Did that construction happen in a way that impacted communities in different ways?
Well, I say yes. Now, I haven't done much research on this except for my own observations. But one thing that has affected is the corporatization of higher education, where we now have division of labor. We create whole departments for IT, for everything. We are all sequestered in our own little buildings for the most part. So we have a business college building. We have an administrative building where in the old days we used to be all together more. Mm-hmm. And we have subcontractors doing the food, you know, the feeding program. So we have it set aside for them. So it's not that anybody can just go in and sit down. And so we used to have a lot more interaction in the student union when we had more of a, you know, people were employees here. We had a dining room you could just walk in and out of. And so students and faculty would interact and faculty from different departments would interact. Mm-hmm. But we don't have that type of public space anymore.
Mm. And do you see that changing the overall conversation, the cohesion of the university? Where do you see the impacts of the loss of that sort of community space?
I see it very important because we tend to not even know people who are in the building just right steps away from ours, mm-hmm. unless we're on some type of official committee with them. Or, you know, there are certain times and certain people who make certain events for people to interact, like a meal that goes for different colleges, you know, parts of the meal, and that type of thing. But other than that, we're only together for official reasons, or if we individually reach out, but we don't have a space on campus for us to just mingle informally.
Mm. How does a place like, Aberdeen or, you know, the other college towns in South Dakota, for example, how is the community different because there is a university there? And how have we seen that change over time?
Well, I think what we see, I know from my perspective, one thing I've been involved in more is community outreach. Instead of getting academic publications, I've done programs and community research for different organizations in town and involving my research methods classes. And so this gave them an opportunity, the students and the different organizations who were looking for employees, a chance to interact. And so that was one of the things that's been my mission, I feel, to do. And so I've interacted with a lot of people from the different organizations here over the 23 years and provided opportunities for students to do as well.
What's next for you? I know you've traveled extensively. You've devoted so much of your life to Northern State. What are you looking forward to?
I'm moving back south. I've got my mother's there, and I'm an only child, and so South Carolina, and being by a big body of water and taking up sailing again.
Really?
Nice. Yes, and I would also like to, I've done training with the Red Cross and got an EMT and all of that, but I need to re-up my background and my training, and so then I can do volunteer work for disasters and different organizations. That'll be good.
Yeah. What will you miss about South Dakota and about Northern?
Well, about South Dakota, I'll miss the resourcefulness and resilience of people. I think back on the East Coast, we whine too much, whereas here you have to be fairly, self-sufficient.
Yeah.
You don't have a cat if power goes off or you have a flat tire. And people are willing to help one another here. And Northern, I'll miss the opportunities to do the work I've done around the community and the interaction with students. I constantly get to learn. And now it's going to be up to me. It won't be part of my job.
Something tells me that you'll be just fine there in that regard. Teresa Stallings with Northern State University. The lecture is at the Williams Library Rotunda at noon on Wednesday. It's called The Power of Unintended Consequences, or How Did We Get Here From There? It's looking at the intersection between sociology and higher education. Professor Stallings, thank you so much, and congratulations on your retirement.
Thank you.